I've come to watch the game with Dan and Carmen because I've never been to a baseball game, not an earnest one, and Dan promised me a hot dog. It's all about the energy, they said. One game and you'll be hooked. I see what they mean. The stands are packed, the smell of garlic fries is strong, kitschy music blares from straining speakers, and a thin man with skin like a rooster's wattle sells raffle tickets from the aisle. And all this not for the major leagues, but for some college game on a cloudy day. I'm impressed. But then, as a nippy October breeze sweeps in from across the stadium, I look at the clock and have a little moment of despair. Half an hour until the game begins. Why are we here so early? Why is everyone here so early? Dan and Carmen are on my left, talking predictions. Carmen's gift for stats is almost savant level. I nudge Dan. Could you call the players professional, technically? I ask. It's single A, he says. Do they get paid then? Dan nods. Already he's resumed his conversation with Carmen. I glance at her. Situated as we are near the top of the bleachers, her gaze is hawk-like, aloof and observant. She scares me a little. I look away to study the fans. Most of them are middle-aged men in blue caps and striped shirts. Some have brought their mitts. They seem like they're enjoying themselves, but it's a serious kind of enjoyment. The one on my right must have sensed my restlessness because he turns to me and he tries to make baseball fan small talk.
Gotta wonder how Powell's arm's doing after last week, he says.
Think they'll play Anderson first inning, he says.
I was worried about a soggy field after all this rain, but you know, the guy who mows it says it's got perfect drainage.
On it goes. I can't respond to any of it, and eventually I have to explain that the two on my left are the baseball fans, not me. He doesn't even try to disguise his loss of interest. He shifts away more than is necessary and leans forward to look at the grass, elbows on thighs and hands dangling between knees, intent. Does he wish to demonstrate for my benefit some ideal posture of the baseball fan? His attentiveness is absurd. Nothing's happening on the field. The players are only just assembling. You can see them doing stretches in the dugout. I ask Dan if he has any gum. He doesn't. I say, look at that guy. A player wearing a blue jersey has just run out into the field. What's he doing? Dan shrugs, and even I'm annoyed with myself. I think about asking for my hot dog now, but his and Carmen's seriousness is shaming me. I know a hot dog request this early would only disappoint them, so I would just watch the player with the blue jersey. He's really giving it his all. Not running, but sprinting, full out. The kind of sprint you save for when you're about to make the winning catch. What an odd thing to do in a pregame warm-up. But what do I know? I track him across the field. At the far end, opposite the bleachers, there's a brick wall with a mural of kids. They're looking up with wide eyes, as though following a home run ball. What is that area called? The deep outfield? The runner is heading straight for it. Heading, to be exact, for a part of the mural with the face of a child, her skin painted a luminous white, and her eyes a deep water green, eyes so large and glossy it's as though she's experiencing some kind of mystic ecstasy. The player's speed is incredible. You can see his cleats kicking up turf. I want to see how he'll make the about face, how he'll halt in the nick of time and reverse unbelievably. These are basically professional athletes, after all. You can expect that sort of show-offy behavior, maybe even a bit of risky, irrational showboating. Because that's what this is turning into with the sprinting man. He's coming far too close to the boundary wall for graceful deceleration now. He's about to run splat into it and knock out all his teeth and give himself a concussion, or worse. He's going to... A squawk escapes me. He really does it. The man goes straight into the wall as though he didn't see it there. I shoot up from my seat and point. That man... He just... Dan and Carmen give me impassive looks. Then they see the player lying supine way out there, and their eyes go squinty. A silence ensues. Others are noticing now, some standing to get a better look. Holy fuck, a guy breathes nearby. What the hell happened to him? My question, too. To say that the player hit the wall accidentally doesn't make sense. To say he sprinted into it deliberately at 30, 40 miles an hour doesn't make sense either. A few of the man's teammates are running over, a kind of rescue mission. Everyone's watching them. It really is something amazing, a human sprinting at full tilt. Not at 90%, not at 99%, but at 100 fucking percent. You don't reach those speeds without certain levels of adrenaline and purpose. I ogle them. And then I have this horrible feeling, a deja vu. Their sprinting is just the same as the first man's. And as the four of them near their collapsed teammate in the blue jersey, and as the green-eyed girl with the angelic, impossibly radiant skin grins above him, her smile far too wide, it happens. First, they reach that decisive point at which deceleration is still possible. Then they cross it. That moment, that turning point, is maybe a tenth or a hundredth of a second, but it's enough. Dread rises up in me like gorge. And then I'm cringing as one by one they hit the mural. Wham! 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 This time, everyone sees it. There's a collective gasp. It's safe to say that no one, before this day, has ever seen a man run against a wall like this, let alone four at once. It's gruesome. There's the moment when the skull makes contact with the brick and rebounds with a little popping bounce. The arms spring out awkwardly like tree branches snapping back into place. Well, of course, the opposite is happening. From all the way in the stands, you can actually hear joints popping and bones crunching. There's no way any of those dudes are getting up. Holy fuck, says the same guy. But it's as though he's marveling at a difficult catch or an unexpected play. Five down in the outfield, another guy says, somewhat oddly. And I turn and see him take his Red Sox cap off to scratch a tufty scalp. He puts the cap back on and readjusts himself in the seat. There's more chattering, more swearing. And only a few seem to notice that the other players on the benches have dropped their bats and mitts and are also running at the outfield wall. Dan and Carmen exchange opaque looks. Is this normal, I want to ask, but I'm too frightened to draw an adequate breath. It's happening now in earnest on the field, player after player sprinting against the bricks, right beneath the mural of the crazy grinning girl with the green eyes. Those eyes, they express a joy beyond the capacity of eyes. I look away. Still, I hear the bones snapping and see the flinching gazes of the fans in the bleachers. The guy in the Red Sox cap has begun to spew a kind of commentary. That's right in Paisley now. Real gamers, both of them. Yes, here's what I call speed. Here's, caught it in the noggin. That's got a smart. I stand, searching for the exit, and am knocked back down immediately as one of the fans charges down the bleachers. He wears an orange number 3 jersey and seems to be in a kind of berserker state, bouldering past people, muttering, "Get away, get away, get away." I watch him knock a kid over, scattering popcorn. I watch the old man selling raffle tickets spin and drop like a bowling pin. Then the berserker is leaping the bullpen fence and sprinting towards the outfield. "Carmen," I say, leaning over Dan. Hers is the authority I need now. "Carmen." But she's fixated on the spectacle. For all her nerdiness, Carmen has always struck me as a reasonable person. I can't understand how she's watching this, how she just sits there, taking it in. Streams of spectators are hurrying down the aisles now. There's a frenzy to make it to the grass. "Get away, get away, get away," people cry. Everyone's frightened. Every eye has that wide-pupiled look of an animal facing the hunter. Or is it exhilaration? "The exit," I say. "Which way's the exit?" My friends ignore me. There's a mound, an actual mound of bodies in the deep outfield. The field is a river of runners. The Red Sox guy's commentary is like a TV left on in the other room. "Can you feel the energy, folks? The stadium's alive." "Carmen, please," I say, "answer me." But when I look, Dan and Carmen are 3 levels down. I fly after them down the bleachers, but already they're on the grass. It's over for them. It's over for everyone. From the outfield comes the steady crack of skulls. The urge to flee zaps up and down my spine. I run. I have to get away. The Red Sox guy barks, "He's out of here! He's going, going, gone!" Suddenly hot dog wieners and ketchup bottles are everywhere. I've knocked over a cart. Jesus, what am I? Did I almost? I stop 10 feet from the grass, trembling. Again, the commentator. "What a day it's been, folks! That's what I call a ball game!" Then he goes silent. There's only the sound of shoes ringing on metal. Is even this dude going to sprint at that wall? A Red Sox cap flashes by me and I reach out, catch his arm, jerk him to a halt. "I won't let you," I say. There are tears in my eyes. The man struggles like a hooked fish. "You could die," I say. "Why are you doing this when you know you could die?" He goes still then.
He looks at me, looks me right in the eyes, and whispers, "You fool! This is how it's been since the beginning of time." Then he tugs free. There's a vast stadium silence and the sound of his padding feet. The man is heavy-set. It takes him longer than most to reach the wall, excruciatingly long, but you can see he's in a kind of rapture. Halfway, his cap blows off, but he keeps running. Finally, thwack, he's out. He's joined Dan and Carmen and all the fans in the pile of bodies, and I'm alone in the bleachers, blinking as the sun, for the first time all day, rolls out like a chariot wheel from the clouds.